Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Net at Night is brought to you by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is Net at Night with Sarah Lane and Leo Laporte. Episode 106 for June 24th, 2009. Iran's Social Revolution. Net at Night is brought to you by Audible. For your free audiobook and a whole lot more, visit audible.com/night, N-I-G-H-T. And by GoToMyPC. Think remote access to your PC is complicated? Think again. It's easy with GoToMyPC. For your free 30-day trial, visit gotomypc.com/night. And by squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to squarespace.com/night. It's time for Net at Night from Petaluma, California. I'm Leo Laporte.
And from San Francisco, California, I am Sarah Lane.
And a very good day to you, Sarah Lane.
And a good day to you too, Mr. Laporte. Of course, I'm filling in for Amber MacArthur, who's I don't know where she is.
She's on, this is what they say in TV, on assignment.
She is on, well,
she's on assignment, which means we don't know where the hell she's probably hiking the mountains of South Carolina with the governor.
Right.
Yeah. No, so, actually, I think she had a speech.
Who's that guy anyway? Did they find him yet?
They found, well, okay, so he's the governor of South Carolina, gets in a little tiff with the state legislature,
and
disappears for 3 days. His wife says, I haven't talked to him. I don't know where he is.
But then she says, but I'm sure he's fine.
And then he says, oh, I was hiking in the mountains in the Appalachian Trail. I think he was shacked up with somebody. Come on.
Like a lady?
I don't know. Either a lady or Jim Beam. I don't know. I mean, isn't that a little weird?
I got the impression that the wife was like, yeah, I don't know where he is, but I don't really care.
But I don't care. Exactly.
You know,
wouldn't
so
she
maybe
know? I mean, wouldn't you think if he packed the hiking boots and the tent that he'd say, see ya, honey, I'm going to go cool off for a little bit?
Or she'd say, I need to file a missing persons report. My husband is missing. This is a really big problem. Maybe he's done this before. Maybe he just likes hiking.
I love this stuff. It has nothing to do with anything, but it's just good gossip.
That's true.
We're going to talk. We have some really interesting stuff. First, of course, our usual links, and we've got two interviews today because I don't know. Are you watching the news? Are you watching Twitter? Did you see that today the White House tweeted in Farsi?
I saw that, and then I saw a variety of scripts that are now being generated so that you can easily translate from Farsi to English because that seems to be coming up a lot more.
Fascinating what's going on.
I try to follow as much about Iran as possible, and even I feel behind because so much is coming in, and it's so immediate, and it's like, you know, I've stopped going to CNN, which is, CNN.com is one of those places that, you know, I know it's not, you know, Web 2.0 or anything, but up until this particular news issue, I would still check CNN.com to just figure out what's going on. And CNN.com is just, I don't know, they're behind. It's weird. It's like other people are talking about stuff before it ever gets to their homepage, which I can't remember really ever happening before and it bothering me this much. So, yeah,
I find it just fascinating. I feel like we're watching history. Don't you feel like that?
That we're watching history?
In the making, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
live,
you know,
live history.
Live history. It's the next Iranian revolution, you know, if you want to compare it.
And it's happening in social media, which is why it is kind of appropriate for us to talk about. We have two people coming up in just a little bit. Dane did an interview with a friend of his who is an Iranian blogger who just escaped, basically, or was kicked out of Iran. He's talking to him. He talked to him this morning in Dubai. That's coming up. And then we're going to talk to another Iranian blogger, somebody who's quite well known, who's now in the States, Omid Memahbarian, who also has some really interesting things to say about all of this, blogged from Iran. I mean, the poor guy, he tried to get in the United States, wasn't allowed in because he was on the, you know, I don't know what, suspected terrorist list, went back to Iran, where he's immediately arrested for blogging. I mean, the story is fascinating. So we're going to get some real insight into this from people who are deeply involved with what's going on. So that's coming up too.
I'm really excited about this. I mean, talking about the internet is great, but this is one of those situations where it's so important what's going on, and it's so important how people are sharing information, and to be able to talk to two people who have really been on front lines much more than you or I is like invaluable information.
Absolutely.
Because,
absolutely,
you know, there's only so much I can read, and, you know, some of it I digest it, and I only understand so much. So I'm very much looking forward to these interviews.
Well, we're going to get to those in just a little bit, and we're going to get to your links in just a bit as well and talk about how the internet has changed everything. I mean, everything about news, about politics, about the world. But before I do that, I do want to, we have some great sponsors. I want to give them their due, and GoToMyPC is one of them. GoToMyPC does that great remote access software that, you know, you're probably familiar with. We certainly talk about it a lot on all of our shows. GoToMyPC.com/night is the place to go to try it free for 30 days. One of the thing about GoToMyPC that's so fantastic is it makes remote access easy. You know, you remote access, if you haven't tried it, is fantastic. It means you can, you could try it right now. Put GoToMyPC on your office computer or wherever you are right now. And then wherever you go, you can get to that computer. You can get critical files. You can use it as a safe way to surf, as a VPN from places that are a little sketchy. It's absolutely 128-bit encrypted, secure. It couldn't be an easier solution, and yet it is the top as far as sophistication goes. I want you to try it right now. So here's how it works. You open up a web browser. This is the hardest part. Right now, you're going to type in GoToMyPC.com/night. That was the hardest part.
And that's not that hard.
Not that hard. You sign up for the free trial. Click download. It'll take 2 minutes to install the software. You do not have to configure the router. You do not have to go to the IT department. You don't have to do anything. It's just there. And it's done. That's it. Now, the next time you're out and about, whether you're at home, whether you're at work, traveling, you just go to a web browser on a Mac, a PC, on Linux, any web browser. You go to GoToMyPC.com. You enter your secure username and password. Click connect, and there it is. Your desktop. With all the programs, you can run any program, send and receive email, access any network resource, even drag and drop files. It's so easy and so useful. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Go to GoToMyPC.com/night, N-I-G-H-T, and try it free. We thank them so much for their support. They're a great company. I've known Citrix for a long time, and I'm really glad they're partners with us on Net at Night. You know, somebody just said that, you know, Abby's been doing a show on the network. It's her internship for the summer called Abby's Road.
And she has?
Yeah, isn't that cute?
And Barry, I didn't know.
Yeah. And somebody said we should have Sarah's Lane.
Oh.
We got like Abby's that. Road and
I
Sarah's
like
Lane.
Yeah. That's cute. Yeah. It's funny. Having the last name Lane is people get a really good, big kick out of it because there are Sarah Lanes all over the country. And I'm sure there's.
Are there really? There's Sarah Lanes?
Canada as well. Oh, yeah. There are a lot of Sarah Lanes. And people will, you know, they'll come across the sign, you know, at the end of the road.
They'll take a picture and they'll send it to you. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, the thing is at this point, I mean, I've gotten about 50 Sarah.
You have a little collection.
Yeah, I like it. It's good fun.
A collection of Sarah Lanes.
Fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently there is a Leo's Lane somewhere. Somebody just told me in the chat room. So.
Oh, I like that.
I should get some of those. But I'm not named Leo Lane.
No.
You're no relation to Lois Lane, are you?
Well, no, I don't think that I have anything to do with Lois Lane. However, if you want to hear something really weird.
Yes.
Okay, let me remember how this goes because Superman lore is, yeah, I never really read the comics, but Lois's father and sister were Sam and Lucy, and those are the names of my cats.
And you didn't know that ahead of time?
No. Believe me,
it's
probably not one of those Superman things. I would have been like, hey, Sam and Lucy. I just happened to like both of the names, but I thought that was kind of fun. It was kind of a Twilight Zone moment for me. Superhero moment.
So did you get a new iPhone or did you pass
it? No, you know, I only got my iPhone as a very generous gift from one Kevin Rose for Christmas this last year because he felt so sorry for me because I was still using a BlackBerry Pearl. And
that's kind of cute.
I don't care. It was a charity gift.
He felt so guilty. Did he give you a new one or give you his old one?
No, he bought me it was a gift card.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
16 gig. I got the white one. Oh. Yeah, it was a wonderful present. I mean, top notch.
Of course, anyway, you have to pay the rest. Somebody said to me, the iPhone is such a ripoff. It's $2,000 over the 2 years of the contract. So he gave you the first 10%. The rest of it, you have to pay.
Exactly. I mean, it's the gift that
keeps on taking.
Keep on taking.
But no, that's a nice gift, and I shouldn't mock it because we've given away. We had a contest.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty thrilled.
That's how we did it.
You know, it's sure. I mean, I could have saved up the money and gotten my own iPhone. My T-Mobile account was expiring with my BlackBerry, and it all kind of came together in this really nice way. But I don't know that I would have. It's harder to buy it for yourself. You know, it's such a nice gift, but it's harder to spend that money on yourself. At least I have a hard time plunking down a lot of money, but you know, I can buy something for my mom that's you know, $500 and it makes me feel better. Anyway, because I'm such a new customer, I'm nowhere near the amount.
You wouldn't get it.
So I'm just once I realized what the terms were and that I was so far away, I kind of put it out of my mind. I am bummed. I would love.
I wouldn't
camera.
Be bummed. You know, one of the messages I've been kind of putting out on the radio show and stuff is just take you got a 3G. Put the 3.0 on it, and you're 90% there anyway. What do you need a compass for? Come on.
The whole compass thing, I understand that it's going to help iPhone games with you know, sort of
actually,
realistic.
Somebody did a browser that's kind of interesting for the G1, where you're standing in front of a building, and it knows you're facing the building. First, it knows where you are from the GPS, and then knows what building you're facing, and then it annotates it. Says great shoes here, or this building was built in 1854 by General Nelson, or whatever.
Oh yeah, it's a
Layar. It's called.
Oh,
it's a browser.
Yeah,
for the G1.
And they had a little demo in Amsterdam.
Yeah,
that they were showing someone walking around. The concept
cool.
is really cool. I thought, you know, the way that when I was actually watching, I was like, that could be really distracting. But I guess you could just toggle it on and off. Very neat.
Yeah, you don't leave it on all the time.
Right.
I mean, that
Flash
would be silly.
For Android, too, so I hear.
Really? When?
Soon. Let's see. Let me pull up the article. I was reading it.
That would be. See, that's something still that probably will never be on an iPhone.
And it burns me up. I'll tell you what. Burns me up. Let's find that article. I think.
That's all right. I'll tell you what. Well, you've got a bunch of links. That's good enough. I saw it. You saw it. That's good enough.
Yeah. But we're not lying.
We'll leave that as an exercise for the listener. You find it.
I like that.
That's what Google was made for. Use Bing and see if you can find it. Meanwhile. A book.
Oh, gosh.
This is funny. Called Look at This Effing Hipster.
Right. Yeah. It actually uses the expletive. This is. So there is a blog. It's a Tumblr blog. They use Tumblr.
Now I'm going to show this on the screen. Hide your eyes if you have young ones, because it's got the expletive in the title.
It has the expletive in the title. The URL is just sort of the acronym LATFH. Anyway, it's a Tumblr that's the underlying theme is look at this effing hipster, because hipsters, while somewhat hard to define, have become very annoying for people, right?
Yeah.
And so this is actually, I have to say, as sort of gimmicky as it is, it's a pretty
fun to mock these guys, I must say.
It's a pretty funny site. In fact, you're going to get down to one that I just love. It's the one about the tofu dogs. There it is. Can you grab me a tofu dog? I'm busy live blogging this picnic.
He's got a power strip. He's got four things plugged in.
I love him.
And he needs a
tofu dog, but he can't get up.
You get me a tofu dog? I'm kind of busy. I'm live blogging.
Anyway, so this is one of those websites that you chuckle a little bit and you might return one or two times and then you forget about it. Well, look at this effing hipster now has a book deal.
A book deal? You're kidding. This is from blog to book deal. You're right. This is not an unusual transition.
And the thing is that this is not so much like, wow, good for them, they got a book deal. It's more of like, gee, I mean, how dumb does your site have to be before someone wants to offer you money to write a book about it? Which is just, I can't imagine what the book would be. You know, reprints of the pictures that were already on the blog.
There's a number of blogs now that I really enjoy. There's the family photos one, right? What is that called?
Awkward family photos.
Awkward family photos.
Yes.
Where people just get a chance to recycle really awful pictures.
And they're really bad.
Awful.
I mean, they're so bad, you don't even know what way is up. The thing is that there are a lot of these blogs, many of them without much commentary at all, that have gotten book deals. This Is Why You're Fat, Harper Studio.
Yep.
Pets Want to Kill Themselves, Three Rivers Press. Postcards from Yo Mama, Chuck Norris Facts, Stuff White People Like. I mean, these are, they're funny and people like them. But I mean, when's the last time you heard about Stuff White People Like? The blog, it's come and gone. And
you're right. You're right. I mean, these are short-lived memes.
They're short-lived memes, but it's like, who is buying the coffee table book version?
Somebody is.
I don't get it. I mean, I can't imagine that there's that much money being changed hands. But I don't know. I think, you know, I'm going to sit home tonight and think of a really dumb blog idea, and I'm going to be a published author. I'm convinced. I'm sure of it.
Link number two, Gogi? Gogi?
So, all right. So
Gogi? Why do you say that? Gogi?
Goji. The only reason I know that is because they spell it out phonetically on their website. So this company called Goji, they seem to have a few projects in the works, but the one that interests me the most, this is really fun, is it's actually an iPhone app called Text Plus. And the reason that this is so cool is because with this iPhone app, which is free, by the way, it doesn't cost you any money, you can actually use SMS to text your friends, but circumvent your phone's network and actually
pay
go
nothing.
Over Wi-Fi. Exactly. So basically, if you've got a text plan where you get, you got 400 messages that you can send a month and you get up there every month or you go over and you end up always having to pay more, you should really be using Text Plus. What's also nice about Text Plus is, so it takes advantage of SMS groups. Now, your iPhone will do that anyway. You can send
it
a text.
Will? You can have a group?
Yeah. You can send a text to more than one person. Yeah, oh. That's why. Yeah, I always get, Merry Christmas texts, and I can I'm only one of many. However, if I text that person back, it only goes back to that person.
So it doesn't maintain the conversation.
Exactly. So if I send a note to five people using Text Plus, when one of those five people sends a note back, even if they don't even have an iPhone, because again, it's going over SMS, we all get it. So it's actually really more of a... It's like a Gmail conversation where everything is in groups. So that's kind of fun.
I like that.
I know. I mean, it's kind of like,
I pay for unlimited texting, but I don't have the group, so I might want to do that.
See, I don't have unlimited texting, and I also use my phone so much more as a computer than really as like a texting.
It's kind of nice to have texting. Well, I text a lot. I'm texting more and more.
It's great because it's so much less intrusive than being on the phone in certain ways. But I do text. I have a plan where I don't have an issue. I've never gone over, but who knows? Maybe at some point I will. And I know a lot of people do have that problem.
Oh, remember we read the story about the girl who had, 20,000 texts in a month?
Yeah.
$5,000 bill.
I know. Crazy.
Yeah.
It's worth saying also that although it doesn't really matter anymore for everyone who has iPhone 3.0, Goji did allow you to do landscape texting before 3.0.
That is a nice feature. I have to say, I'm really glad I could type sideways.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I've got small fingers and I really have a hard time. I can't text really fast.
Yeah.
With the landscape, I have so much, you just have so much more spacing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Text Plus, it's kind of a no-brainer. The darn thing's free. You can use group texting so much better than you can just on the native iPhone software. And you don't have to go over your plan if that's the kind of plan that you have.
So even with unlimited texting, I might want to get this.
Exactly. Because then you can have sort of that group. You can send a note to me, Martin, Colleen, and Dean. And then I can send a note back and everyone will get it. And then Colleen can chime in and it'll be a big fun party.
Well, we did that with Tatango, remember? And now Tatango has said, we're not going to do free anymore. You're going to have to pay.
Then you got to move over to Goji.
Yeah.
Goji, by the way, is G-O-G-I-I. I never would have.
Oh, you know why? Because it's 60611.
Oh.
That's,
so?
Yeah. So that's their short code. Get it?
Sorry, I would not have gotten that at all. Not at all.
Well, if
well,
you look
to Tango,
the-
you can, you know, best of luck getting money, but there are other options. So there you have it.
One more, and then we're going to get a little more serious and talk about the situation in Iran with two people who are there or were there until moments ago. But first,
so are we going to talk Spezify?
Yeah, I'd like to know
Spezify
about Spezify.
Really cool. What,
this is another search engine?
Sort of. So go to Spezify. By the way, this is by a fellow named Fred Wilson on FriendFeed. This is how I found out about Spezify. I love FriendFeed for stuff like this. Go ahead and enter Leo Laporte.
Okay. Fred Wilson is a venture capitalist, very well-known venture capitalist, who I also follow on Twitter and FriendFeed. I like his stuff.
You know, I think I followed him because of you, because he kept showing up on stuff that you
he's
liked.
He's a really good blogger, and he's a very sharp guy. We actually have tried to get him on Twitter a couple of times. He's a friend of Jason's, and I just haven't... My Safari is temporarily unresponsive. Come on, Safari, I'm working here!
Safari!
All right, let me go to the other Safari. I keep, just in case, I keep two Safaris running, just in case this should happen. So let's go to the other Safari and Spezify. So you say any enter my name, huh?
Enter your name.
I like how it kind of shrinks down to fit the word that's in it.
I know, it's kind of fun, huh?
All right.
So you enter a name, you say okay, and all of a sudden,
what the heck?
The page is populated visually, I might add, with all sorts of articles, Flickr photos, videos, things that are tagged with Leo Laporte.
And it's like a scale. I can slide back and forth and
yeah, it's very, it's, I'm not even really sure how their population works because I searched for my own name and as I kept scrolling up and down, things kept appearing and
gosh,
there were really unflattering pictures of me. I mean, it's ridiculous. But anyway, so the idea is just
and
that,
of me too. Oh, how so nice.
It's very scrapbooky, you know, and in fact, it's very scrapbooky, as if you were cutting out these pictures and putting them in a scrapbook yourself. The idea is that it's really just it's kind of a crazy snapshot of all the stuff that's related to you that Spezify wanted to come up with, right? So if you go up to the upper right,
here I am with Soccer Girl.
Hi, Soccer Girl. She's cute. If you go to the upper right-hand corner, you see a little tool icon.
Yeah,
that's your
what
preferences.
Do I do with that? Yeah.
If you hit preferences, you get a better of how it's searching for
Amazon, Yahoo, Twitter, eBay, and MSN.
And then you can search images, text, and video are all on right now. If for any reason you were only interested in video, for example,
right.
You could go ahead and do that. You can turn safe search off if you think that there might be.
And it's just like this giant canvas of stuff.
Exactly. And it's when I searched for myself, a lot of stuff came up and I was like, oh, wow, look at that. I mean, this is definitely stuff that I could find about myself on Google in one form or another, but it's kind of nice to have it just sort of populate on a page. You know,
it's
in this
weird.
Kind of-
it's kind of a strange experience. Now, okay.
It's a strange experience.
Yeah.
It's the Leo cloud.
So let me just try somebody. Let's try Conan O'Brien.
Let's try Conan O'Brien.
Is it A-N or E-N? A-N.
I think it's
E-N. Yeah. It's E-N. That's good because it didn't seem to impede it. All right. So if it's somebody who's a real celebrity, there's going to be a lot of, wow, look at all this. This is fun.
It's fun. Yeah. It's sort of like, I feel as if there's less rhyme or reason to the search results and it's kind of just throwing stuff at you.
That's okay. It's serendipity.
There's a little of an I'm feeling lucky type of a thing going on.
Or just unlucky as the case might be.
Or unlucky. Yeah. and anyway, it's good. Spezify.
Spezify. Yet another weird search play.
I know. Wow. I love this stuff.
Yeah. Very cool.
God bless the internet.
So we've got two guests on the show. One interview was recorded earlier today by Dane Golden, my assistant here at the Twit Cottage, the president of Twit. He talked with Jason Rezian, who was in Iran until a day ago or two, and he's now been repositioned. I think he was thrown out. We'll find out the details when we talk to him. Actually, Dane's handing me a note right now. It says, for our live viewers, we record this show on Tuesday, and they can see Jason, if you're watching on Tuesday, on ABC World News tonight. He'll also be on NPR and All Things Considered this afternoon. So This is very timely. Just so you know, he was in Iran and was, I guess, forced out of Iran today and is in Dubai right now. So let's listen. And then we're going to go live and talk to our next guest, Omid Mamarian, and talk to him about his experience as a blogger in Iran as well. Or I'm sorry, a blogger about Iran. He's from Berkeley, I should say. But he's following the story very closely. So we're going to do that. Actually, before we do that, I hate to do this real quickly. I just want to jump in with Audible because we can't let them slip away into the night. Audible.com/night is the name of the site. That's the place to go for your Audible books. Great choices. 60,000 books, all categories, all topics. If you're a reader, you're going to love Audible. But if you don't have time to read and wish you could be reading more, Audible is a lifesaver with amazing stuff. We've talked about this before, Sarah. You like kind of inspirational stuff, right?
I like inspirational stuff. I like a good fiction novel, though, too, because I often want to escape my own life.
Right. Well, and I also do, and I read a lot of fiction, but I find I'm listening to a lot of nonfiction too, because I like to use Audible as a way to kind of learn about what's going on. And I wanted to mention this: if you're interested in the history of what's going on in Iran, this is by Amir Tahiri. It's called "The Persian Night: Iran from Khomeini to Ahmadinejad, Iran under the Khomeiniist Revolution." So it is. What happened after the Shah of Iran was overthrown and the revolution that followed and that we are, you know, in kind of maybe perhaps the tail end of right now. If you want some context for what's going on in Iran, this is a great place to start. So this is another way that I use Audible because I don't have time, frankly, to learn all I need to. But there is time in the car, at the gym, cleaning house, washing dishes, weeding in the garden when I can listen. Even though I can't read, and that's when Audible really comes in handy. So your first book is free.
On the treadmill, you've got to be listening.
Got to do something.
You know, if you're running, I can't read a book when I'm running. I can't, even if I wanted to, I can't do it.
Right. This is perfect for you. You know what I've been reading in the gym of late, and I have to say it makes for quite entertaining reading while you're in the gym. It's called Bonk. Have you seen this book,
Mary? Like Bonk.
Mary Roach wrote it. She wrote Stiff, the story of the...
Oh, Mary Roach. She had that TED Talk, didn't she?
Yeah. She's wonderful.
Yeah.
And where is that book? Oh, here it is. Bonk is the curious coupling of science and sex. It's about sex researchers, a history of sex research, and it's frankly fascinating. Fascinating book. So, but maybe, you know, for the gym, maybe. I don't know. I was blushing from time to time.
Ooh, that's kind of fun. It's kind of your little secret. Nobody knows
what I'm listening to. You could also listen to her other books, Spook and Stiff. She likes one word titles.
I like her.
Stiff is about dead people, by the way. It's no relation to Bonk. So audible.com. See the variety. You get the idea. Audible.com/night. Give it a try. Your first book's free. When you go there right now and sign up for the gold account, you can listen to any of these books absolutely free. And if you decide to stick around, more's awaiting. But if not, you get to keep the book. No charge. Audible.com/night. So earlier today, Dane, because of the time differences, was able to talk to Jason. Jason is in Dubai right now. Jason Rezaian. And we're going to play a little bit of that interview. And then we'll get the live on the line, Omid Mamarian. So here is Dane Golden. And Jason, we'll just listen to a little bit of this.
Okay, I'm here via Skype with Jason Rezaian. Jason is a Iranian-American freelance journalist. And Jason, you're an old friend of mine. How long have you been in Iran?
Well, I'm in Dubai. I left Iran yesterday under arrest. Yeah.
All right.
It was time to leave the country for a few days because people like me had been... rounded up and hauled off, and I decided to play it safe.
And so, had you been approached by the authorities about your journalist status?
Yeah, I had been, and I had been told in no uncertain terms that I was not to report on the events taking place in Iran. This was about 5 days ago, and I stayed in Iran for another 3.5 days, trying to kind of decide what my next move was, and I decided that at this point in time, I could be much more of service to people outside of Iran, for the time being, at least, than inside. I have a lot of experience and perspective, and have witnessed everything over the last month, and there's nothing that the Islamic Republic can do to stop me from reporting on Iran from other countries.
So Jason, you were you had written during the course of the election, you had written for Slate, your own blog on the San Francisco Chronicle website.
Yeah.
So what have you seen as far as you know, on the ground? What have you seen as far as the use of social media, Twitter, Facebook, email, cell phone usage in regards to what's going on the ground in Tehran?
Well, I think it's been talked about quite a bit over the last few days. But, you know, Iran is a really tech-hungry and tech-loving country. You know, since I first started traveling to Iran, people were always very keen on buying the newest cell phone that they could, the newest digital cameras. You name it. They always wanted the newest and the best, and they were really good at learning how to use stuff. I mean,
so you've been there like 8 times, haven't you? Since you were born in the U.S., actually, but you've been there like 8 times.
Yeah, I was born in the U.S. and I've been traveling back and forth very regularly since 2001. And you know, technology has played a huge role in that country. Over these last few years, people have figured out ways to use technology that their government doesn't like. You know, satellite television, getting around filters on the internet, so, you know, using proxy servers so that they can access websites that have been blocked. But over the last week or so, the government really fought back. And I mean, the first and most glaring example of that was, you know, getting the telecommunications, you know, the state-owned telecommunications company to block the SMS system. I mean, they literally shut down.
So cell phone company in the country, and they blocked SMS?
There's 4 cell phone companies in the country, but they all you know, work under the government, and so you know, 2 of the companies were completely blocked. I mean, the phones didn't even work. And they've been doing that quite a bit. I mean, in the early evening on nights where there was protests, say between 7 and 8 p.m., they'd pull the plug, so to speak, on the entire system and then leave it
off. What day was that again? What day?
That happened almost every day for the last the first day that they did that was the day after the election when the protest first started.
Mm-hmm. And what about, we've heard tales, and I don't know how much, you know, you were on the streets in Tehran or, you know, were getting some of your information, you know, via phone from your friends or whatever, but how much information were you getting via Facebook and Twitter and email, and how much did you see the communication of what was going on the streets being taken place?
Well, you know, I think I didn't get much information from Facebook and Twitter from the time that they blocked both of those sites. I didn't have a proxy server that I was working with. You know, the media has been reporting that pretty much everybody that uses the internet has one of those. That's not the case.
Okay.
A lot of people do, and a lot of people don't. I personally did not. So, you know, I had a couple of opportunities. I was at friends' houses where they had them, and I logged on and made updates and that sort of thing. But, you know, and the other really important thing to point out is that before the election, Twitter was almost unknown in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mr. Mousavi had a page, or a couple of people had dedicated pages to Mr. Mousavi, and I think that was really kind of the start of Twittering in Iran. A couple months ago, when I first got active on Twitter, I was looking for people in Iran, and I could only find, you know, a couple of dozen people total in the whole country. And now that's really expanded exponentially. And I think that the powers that be in the government were a little bit far behind in kind of catching on to the fact that mm-hmm. people were using that as a way to get out information about the campaign. Where
from the U.S., that's what we've seen. We've seen an enormous amount of activity on Twitter.
Yeah, well, I mean, now that I've been in Dubai for the last I guess about 36 hours, the amount of activity on Twitter in trending, you look at the trending topics, Iran elections is the top one, and has been for as long as I've been looking at it for the last couple of days. And now that I'm making regular updates, I'm getting a lot of people following my tweets, and it was surprising to me to come out of the country that is in so many ways so isolated to see the whole world is watching this situation.
And you're on twitter.com/JREZAIAN.
That's right.
So Jason, as far as social media goes, where do you see what's happening with Facebook and Twitter and email and that type of thing? How do you see that influencing the next days and months?
Well, I think that, it remains to be seen how that's going to play out. But, they've kept a pretty good stranglehold on the bandwidth of the internet over the last couple of weeks. I mean, they've really reduced the amount of information that can be sent, which has made it impossible for some people to get out their attachments and videos and all that sort of thing. I think that Facebook and Twitter will likely be blocked officially, but as we know, people have been able to get around that. I think it'll still play a very important role in not only people's day-to-day lives, but in the kind of political development of Iran. And one thing that I think that the people have on their side, obviously the government has the guns and the tanks and all of the weaponry and money and everything else, but the young folks of Iran really have a much better understanding of the technology that they have at their fingertips than the regime does. And I think that moving forward, that's their big advantage. And I think they've shown it the last few days. I mean, they've shown great ingenuity in getting these images and videos out to the rest of the world. And I think it's really a testament to themselves and to the fact that they're dissatisfied with the outcome of this election. And I don't see that stopping. I mean, I think that this is something that can be built off of.
That's Jason Rezaian, who's spent a few weeks in Tehran and now is back in Dubai. Jason, will you be going back to Iran anytime soon?
I hope so. I hope to go back next week. I really,
okay.
I'm not giving up on the place.
Well, you can follow Jason on Twitter, JREZAIAN. And Jason, where else can people find you online?
You can find some of the articles I've written on Slate.com, on SFGate, in Inside Iran blog, and on Facebook.
Jason Rezaian. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, Dane.
Great interview, Dane. Thank you for doing that, and really interesting to hear from him. It's been amazing how social media has really played a part in this, and I think that's significant, Sarah. I think that this is what social media is all about. It's not necessarily revolution, but about people communicating. And
it was interesting that Jason said, before the election,
they didn't even use it.
Really using Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, I'm sure some folks were, but Iran has been, you think of it as a fairly connected, not always progressive, but it's certainly a connected place.
Right,
quite a bit of digital use there, and some countries
you use what you can, and when you can't use SMS, you find another way, and that's what's interesting about social media and technology is it makes it very hard for anybody shut down the conversation because there's always another way. There's always another place. You can use proxy servers. You can find something else. In order to shut this down, they'd have to disconnect the country from the outside world. They may still do that, but that comes with such a big price. They're clearly reluctant to do that,
Especially when folks in other countries, strangers, people who don't even they're not Iranian, nor do they know anyone there, are changing their locations on their Twitter accounts.
Isn't that interesting? I'm not sure that's the right thing to do, but I guess it's to hide where the actual dissidents are.
Well, exactly. It's if we all do it, then how are they going to search for anyone via location?
Right.
So that's sort of the idea. You would think that the person could change their location so that we aren't all in Tehran. But anyway, I don't know.
The whole idea of we're going to get Omid on. I just wanted to get you on. Hi, Omid. Are you there? Can you hear us?
Yes, I do.
Thank you for joining us. Omid Mamaryan was born in Iran, raised in Iran, lives in the United States now. He's in Berkeley, but blogs about Iran and the subjects at hand. You've obviously been watching this closely, haven't you, Omid?
Yes, I've been watching this closely over the past week, almost day and night.
And what are your thoughts right now? I mean, after the very vivid and dramatic videos of that young woman dying in the street, being shot, I think it's been taken to another level, hasn't it, over the last 24 hours?
I think so, because it was a very shocking moment for everybody to
watch. Yeah.
Yeah, and mainly because she was not a kind of active person in politics. She was just a person who wanted to make change and to see, how is it possible that, tons of people come to the streets and ask for the for their rights. So anyways, it was very shocking to see how innocent she was and how the police reacted so violently.
Do you, there's a few questions I've wanted to ask somebody who's really an expert on this. First of all, a number of people have said, well, Mousavi is not the savior that people paint him to be. Is this about Mousavi and about the election? Or at this point, is it about something bigger than that?
I think at the beginning, the Iranian people just felt that they have been insulted, because it was very inconceivable that Ahmadinejad could win with that kind of margin. And it was very obvious that Ahmadinejad, something happened, at that night, and he was announced as the winner of the election. So people thought that they had been insulted, and their anger and their, they were so angry. And at the beginning, the entire thing was about the election.
Right.
But soon after, it became something bigger. And they thought that's a kind of referendum that if the government accepts, then it would be a kind of acceptance that will follow with the other things, like other they would do more and more. So for them, and now to pushing back the government pushing back the government is one of their main goals.
Do you have friends there now? Are you in touch with people in Iran?
I've been in touch with many of my friends. Some of them have been arrested over the past week. Journalists in Tehran that we used to work in the same newspapers, politicians that I used to interview, civil society activists that I helped them shoulder to shoulder in their works, in their activities. So many of them have been arrested, but I've been in touch with family members, some of my friends, people from different parts of the city. I've been able to follow the events almost on a regular basis, every hour.
And how are you doing that? What is it? Facebook? Is it Twitter? What is the chief method people are communicating now?
For my work, I have to call people and talk to people.
The telephone.
Yeah, I call people. I call my friends or the sources I know, and I talk to them on the phone. And it's very interesting that I remember that it was sometimes it's very hard for them. The Iranians are kind of suspicious. They think the government controls and monitors the telephones. But they talked to me, you know, and they talked to me about the slogans, you know, the chants, and what people say in the streets, their feeling, and they felt so so free to talk to me about every single issue.
You know what I find interesting as an American is that, you know, normally I think we wouldn't be as in touch with this as we are if it weren't for Twitter and if it weren't for all these technologies that have kind of brought it home to us. They said that the Vietnam War really was the first time that Americans saw the reality of war up close, and it horrified them, and it was one of the reasons that Americans turned against the war. And I'm wondering if that kind of direct experience of what's happening, you know, an experience that isn't washed, you know, cleansed by the media, but actually of real events, isn't a little shocking to Americans. And I think maybe makes it even all the more powerful. I mean, to see these images come back from Iran really are dramatic.
Yes, I think mainly it's because everybody remembers Iran as a country that is following a very aggressive nuclear program. People, you know, when you say Iran, the first three words that come to their minds is, for example, nuclear power,
right?
Supporting terrorism, or that kind of stuff. So it was the first time I think people, after many years, they learned that in this society, people are so alive. There's a civil society over there, and people are so mobilized. They know what exactly they want, and even they go to the streets, they know how to have a peaceful protest. You saw like hundreds of thousands of people in the streets of Tehran and the other cities, and they were all silent. And so you see that kind of, you know, maturity in that social movement and the society itself. So I think it was very shocking to see that kind of image.
It was. It was a different Iran from what we see in the papers. I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, and you see them, you know, people in the streets. Yes.
Sorry. I was just wondering, you know, I know that you're in Berkeley now. Being the Persian community, sometimes when incidents like this happen and you're so far away and you're sort of part of a community that's really separated geographically from what's really going on, you tend to can feel helpless. With our social networks and the way that you can keep in touch with everyone and you've got friends there. And I mean, do you feel helpless being so far away from what's really going on? Or do you feel like you have a pretty direct line to the information?
That's a very good point, because I have been able to contact many of these people. I have been able to play a role in this kind of interaction. So some of the people who are in Iran, they know that, for example, journalists within the country cannot report some of the stuff that is happening there. So or they do not publish what they say because newspapers are censored. They are under a huge pressure not to cover, so, for example, the protests. And even they cannot publish the name of the people who have been killed. So
right.
By connecting me and the other journalists who are living abroad, they are able to. We are able to just send
You're
the message
them
out.
A voice. And,
yeah, and then you know, the other people, you know, pick up these, the other media pick up these this information, and I think it circulates the information, and people understand, you know, learn what's going on the ground.
You're writing for your comrades in Iran right now. As much as for Americans.
Yeah, I write both in Persian and English. I write for IPS News Agency. So it's like I talk to people. So my sources are in Tehran and other places. I find people. Half of my time, you know, I spend on finding people, connecting people. And so it's a kind of, you know, tough job because, you know, I do it like mobile and from a long distance. But those people are, you know, real people, and they are so important in the society. Anyways, so it has been very, very helpful and very, I think, effective. And Also, you know, many people here call me because I was a journalist in Tehran. They call me and say, you know, who is the best person to talk about on this right. topic? Who is it, you know, how can we contact this person? Or how can, what's going on? So I give them a contact, kind of background information, kind of context. I give them, you know, the name of the people who are good to talk to. And I think it's very helpful because most of the journalists who go to Iran, they go to Iran just for 2 weeks. They go to Iran just for an assignment.
Right.
But it's very hard to write a story about a society that you do not know, and then suddenly something big happens. It's very hard to connect the dots for many journalists. So many of them, I think, you know, that's a part of our job as journalists. You know, we always half of the job is to provide background information, understand the context, and that kind of stuff. So I've been working in this department like for almost 34 hours a day. You know, I receive calls from Hong Kong, to like the United States, from London to Scotland, Canada, and I think they find me online. I've been writing about this, so they find my email or my number, and they contact me and we talk about those kind of stuff.
Well, I know you're going to be on the news tonight on World News Now on ABC, and then also World News Tonight on NBC, and also on NPR's All Things Considered. Before we let, and I'm sure you have a lot of other things to do, so we won't keep you any longer. But before we let you go, what is your prediction for what's going to happen next? Is the Iranian administration going to be able to shut this down? Is it going to continue? Will there be a revolution? What do you think is going to happen?
I think we have not reached that point to call this kind of protests a kind of revolution. What is happening now in Iran is a fight between two sections within the Islamic Republic. Mousavi, the reformist candidate, he thinks that Ahmadinejad and his supporters or his allies in the political in Iran's political structure, they have stolen the votes of people. What they are doing is to transfer the Islamic Republic of Iran to the Islamic government of Iran. Meaning that they do not want that concept of republic. They do not respect the votes of the people. It's going to be, they want a country very similar to like Egypt, like Iraq in the time of Saddam Hussein. Or that kind of countries that, you know, for example, you have an election and Saddam Hussein receives like 95% of the votes.
Right.
And who believes that?
Right.
So these people who believe in the Iran, believe in Iran's constitution, believe in the ideals of Ayatollah Khomeini and that kind of stuff, they think that it should stop Ahmadinejad and his supporters. So this fight is between two fractions within the Islamic Republic. One section believes that, one part believes that they need people to govern better. And Ahmadinejad, and even though they say that, you know, they respect people, they are serving people and that kind of things. But in practice, what they are doing is just to weaken the concept of republic in Iran. So in the coming days, it depends what is happening next, what will happen next. So it depends on the moves by the reformist candidates. I just learned that, you know, they have asked the people to come to the streets again for a peaceful protest. And let's imagine, last Friday, Iran's supreme leader asked everybody to stop the protest. And he said, everybody who come to the streets should accept the consequences of this illegal kind of action, right. Meaning that if the government, can, you know, shoot, you know, police can shoot at you and kill you or whatever, and you're the responsible person, not the government, which is kind of weird because the government right. should be responsible in any case,
right.
You know. It's a kind of, you know, face-off between the government, between the supreme leader and the reformist candidates. If people come to the streets massively, I think it sends a very strong signal to the supreme leader and the conservative base in Iran. And from that point on, we can predict what's going on. But if it goes forward, and people come to the streets, and the government does not think about this, to solve it in a kind of peaceful manner, I can see that in the coming month it will go it will be out of control.
And we will lose the republic, or form a true democracy. When you say out of control, or do you think the supreme leader will Khamenei will just eliminate the republic completely?
That's extreme. An extreme option if they suppress people, if they shoot at people in the streets massively, if they
do you think all this attention from social media, from the world at large, has changed what the consequences of that kind of action? Do they care?
The thing is, from my experience, there's not, most of these authorities, they live in the pre-YouTube, pre-Facebook,
they don't even know
pre-internet kind of era.
Yeah,
so they don't get it. I remember once I was talking to one of these people, and they were asking, they're questioning me, why do I send my articles to the websites out of the country? And I told them, I'm not sending those articles. These people see my articles on my blog or on the page of the newspaper online. And they link to my page, so I learned that I cannot explain them.
They don't get it.
In half an hour.
Yeah.
They don't get it. I say, okay, I fax these articles and they publish it. So
they understand the word fax.
Like this, probably that's very extreme. It belongs to my experience 6 years ago. But many of them are like this, and still they don't get it. They don't get it. How, for example, one amateur footage that goes online on YouTube, how it the media pick it up, and how it damages the image of the Islamic Republic. They don't get it, that it's 50,000 times more than like 20 years ago. That's why the costs for controlling the channels of communication now is, I think, it's much more. It's so much, and also the damage itself is so much too.
But they don't know, and
they
perhaps
don't get
they don't
it,
care.
Ahmadinejad, over the past 4 years, I saw Ahmadinejad, I actually met Ahmadinejad. We had a kind of short conversation last September when he was addressing the General Assembly at the UN. I was working at the UN at the time. And I was shocked, and I told one of the authorities, the deputy of the foreign minister, I told him, Ahmadinejad talked for like 25 minutes, and nobody understood even 5 minutes of that speech, because the first 10 minutes was about Shia and Mahdi and, those kind of stuff that even Shias do not understand it properly. They don't get it. So imagine he was talking at the UN, people at the UN, they're sitting like from 50, 60 different languages, more than that, religions, they don't get it. So you're talking to people from different languages, different ethnicities, and you should speak in a language that is more universal.
Yeah.
It's more general, not, so Ahmadinejad, when he comes to the United States, he still thinks that he's talking to the Iranian people.
Right.
He doesn't get it. Anyways, so I think, many of these politicians and authorities are very local.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that the Islamic Republic has been marginalized from the outside world over the past 20 years is one of the reasons,
Right.
So that's why many people like me, we think, if, for example, the United States, even now, for me, it doesn't matter. If they engage with the Iranian community, if the Iranian authorities come to the other countries and see, for example, Ahmadinejad makes remarks about the United States and how the situation is horrible here, and how democracy is failed in the United States, and that kind of stuff. They should come here or to the Western countries and see what democracy means, what freedom of speech means and how it works and how the society functions and that kind of stuff. But being marginalized from the outside world does not let them understand these concepts.
Right.
And so you see now they act very local. You probably heard the conversation between Iran's foreign minister and three ambassadors in Tehran, three European ambassadors. The language and the tone he used was stunning. You know, there is no politician in the world that uses that kind of language. I was amazed. You know, you don't talk to your enemies like that.
Right.
This is part of diplomacy.
It did seem out of touch. You're right. I completely know what you're saying. We're out of time. I really want to thank you. I want to push people to your blog because you're writing about this at omidmamarian.com, but also your pieces in the Huffington Post, some really excellent background pieces that I highly recommend. It's all there if you go there and read about it, and a great background on what's going on. And Omid, I want to thank you for joining us and talking about giving us a little bit of a better understanding about what's going on in Iran right now. And I just hope your friends and family in Iran are safe.
Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah.
It's a great conversation. Very
Thanks.
Interesting.
Take care.
Thank you.
All right, Omid.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Yeah,
Bye-bye.
It's fascinating, isn't it, Sarah? I mean, it's just, I thought that's interesting, the issue of them being out of touch.
It's because you have to assume that once upon a time, watching the nightly news, you know, Peter Jennings is telling you about what's going on in Iran, and you're seeing maybe some photographs, some video, and going, wow, the situation is really out of hand.
Right.
Well, Omid is not only is he talking to people on a regular basis, but they're feeding him information that then he can get out to the rest of us that they are, you know, they're not allowed to, or they're not comfortable, or they're afraid to say themselves. I mean, it's really quite amazing.
Yeah. Well, I just I think watching this so close and so personally is fascinating, and I can't take my eyes off it, whether it's CNN or Twitter. Did you see? I mean, the Farsi that now we're starting to see on the web. It's just fascinating. We are almost out of time. I do want to mention your favorite hosting service before we go. The great folks at Squarespace who do SarahLane.com and a bunch of other great blogs, including Kevin Rose's. They're doing our Inside Twit blog. I'm moving Leoville over there. Squarespace is more than just a blogging host. It is the best way to host any website. Their amazing cloud-based technology means you never run out of bandwidth. The prices are very affordable. The flexibility is unbelievable. And with Squarespace, you can import your blog from WordPress, from Blogger, from Movable Type, from TypePad, immediately be up and running, or export out if you want to move off of it. You're never trapped. That's why it's a great idea to take advantage of this free 2-week trial. You don't even have to have a credit card. You just go to squarespace.com/night and you could try it absolutely free. They're giving away 30 iPhones in 30 days. Let's not forget about that. That runs out July. When does that go to? I think July 7th. So if you're listening to this before July 7th, just tweet with the hashtag #SquareSpace. You can say anything you want, but that will put you in the drawing for one of 30 iPhones, an iPhone a day for 30 days. That ends July 7th. For more information, go to squarespace.com/iPhone. No purchase necessary. Squarespace will choose one winner a day at random from all the entries. Squarespace.com/iPhone for the details. Squarespace, do you still, I watch Alex Lindsay and he's still tweaking at his design every 5 minutes. Are you kind of stopped messing with the design, Sarah? Now you just use Squarespace
I stopped messing with my design and I sat on it and I'm now working on a new design.
Can't help it. It's so easy. It's so fun.
I can't help myself. Well, you know what happens too is that, you know, I like my website and, you know, I keep telling people it's not that I find anything wrong with my website. I think it looks really nice. However, Squarespace, there's something about Squarespace blogs. They kind of just stand out to me as I can see when I'm a mile away. You know, it's like, oh, I know that they're
using
Squarespace.
It's beautiful. It's simple.
There's a crispness to it. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds weird, but it's just, I like other people's Squarespace blogs. And as Squarespace kind of continues to grow, more and more of my friends and colleagues are starting to use it. And I'm getting jealous of other people's really cool designs. So I'm actually, you and Amber and I had talked about more of kind of that beginning landing page type of a design, which I think just works better for me because I don't frequently blog, but I do frequently participate on the internet in a variety of different ways. And I think that I can redesign my site to just better reflect my overall activity rather than just looking stagnant week after week because I haven't written anything over 140 characters at a time.
Yeah. So yeah, I know that feeling.
That's kind of my idea. You know, I mean, honestly, it's like some, you know what? Do you ever have a thought? Well, you don't love Twitter.
No, I never have a thought. I never have a thought. No, what? Go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish the sentence.
Let's say, you know, pretend, if you will, that a friend feed isn't an option. But sometimes I'll have a thought that's somewhat succinct. You know, I am walking down the street and something kind of comes to mind and I think, ooh, that would be a good tweet. And I try to bring it down.
Yeah,
and
I do that all the time.
No, I actually can't make that 140 characters. I can't.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's not.
Do you blog then?
Well, that's the thing. It's like there needs to be something between the
friend feed.
It's totally a friend.
It's in between. It's because 140 characters sometimes isn't enough, but sometimes you don't want to take the time to do a whole blog post. That's where friend feed. But you know what's cool about Squarespace? You can import your Twitter feed, your friend feed. So you really can have one place that everything goes to as part of a gorgeous design. I want you to try Squarespace free, folks. Go to squarespace.com/night. You can try it free for 2 weeks. No credit card needed. The sign up is a snap. And then if you decide you want to sign up, use the promo code NIGHT and you'll get 10% off. How about that? That's a good deal. Squarespace.com. You got to have a presence on the web. If you're unhappy with your other hosting company or maybe you want to get a little deeper, a little prettier, a little more powerful, try Squarespace. They're great.
Did you want to know the details on system?
Yeah, I saw this and I was a little perturbed because system was the first show Revision 3 did. It was Kevin Rose's first, you know, kind of show outside of tech TV.
Exactly.
He did it with Fufu, Dan Howard.
Yeah. The old Fufu.
The old Fufu.
So the idea is that system evolved over time. It started with Kevin and Dan, and Dave Randolph did some stuff, you know, even towards the beginning, and Patrick Norton came on. It was before I started at Revision 3, so I don't know, 2006-ish. Anyway, it was, you know, a really neat show, and it's more sort of bigger scale, technical soldering.
It's the show I think is the closest to what the screensavers at Ethos
Very hands-on, yeah. I think that there was a lot of pressure to put together these sort of large-scale projects, some of which took up a lot of space.
Oh, it's hard work. It's tough.
Week after week.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, and I don't really know anything about systems numbers. I know that they were good and steady when I was there, but I have to assume that maybe that had something to do with it. I'm really not sure. I don't want to speculate.
So did they cancel it? Did they put it on hiatus? What did they do to it?
Well, what they've done is they've kind of folded it into the very successful show Techzilla,
right,
which Patrick also hosts every week with Veronica Belmont. And, you know, it's a great show. It's kind of like it's got that screensavers-esque, you know, the content is enough so that you can kind of be talking, you know, sort of more computery kind of a stuff, and then throw in one of these system projects. And I think that for everyone, it probably just made more sense.
Yeah, since Patrick's hosting it and he hosts Techzilla.
Yeah, because they're both Patrick. And I think that he said, listen, this has nothing to do with system, you know, us not liking it or us wanting to, you know, make it go away. We just don't want to have the show that we're not doing regular stuff on. So why don't we, when we've got a great project and we're ready to go with it, we'll roll it into a show that is already healthy and thriving.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I hope they keep doing it because that was the original ethos of it. And that's what started Revision 3. But you're right. I mean, now pretty much Revision 3, you know, between Dignation and Techzilla, those are the two big shows. You might as well put System in Techzilla. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I think, you know, I guess I'll have to see how they roll it in. But
right,
I think it would probably be an extra special episode of Techzilla that has a system project in it.
Yeah, because really the screensavers, that was it. That you had the system thing and then you would do something else.
Yeah.
Variety show. That makes sense.
I love that.
I do too. I like variety. Well, this was certainly a show full of variety.
It certainly was, wasn't it?
from wacky Lynx to serious revolution in Iran.
To Iran to, I don't know, Squarespace.
We got it all, ladies and gentlemen. Yep. Every bit of it. And Sarah, I really appreciate your filling in for Amber. She'll be back next week.
Happy
I will be gone to China for a couple of weeks after that. We have some shows recorded ahead, but maybe you and Amber could do a show without me?
Absolutely. Oh, gosh. Can you relinquish that much control? What will we say?
You know, my only fear is that you'll do so well that that'll be it. I'll be history.
I don't think you have to worry about that.
Oh, I know.
You've got that je ne sais quoi that nobody
else.
Yeah,
I got the je ne sais quoi until they realize they don't need me. And then I don't have such sequa. I just have sucka.
Yeah. So are you, you're leaving next, you, will you be here next?
A week from Thursday.
Hey, okay. So I will see you or hear
next
you.
Week.
I will virtually see you next Tuesday.
And then I'll be gone for a few weeks. Yes.
Pretty fun. Super jealous.
Everything going good at Current?
Current's good. Yeah. We're plugging along, you know?
And I know that Sarah and Marty's This Week in Fun is more fun than ever before. And that's all every Friday. You can watch live, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Right, that's right.
2200 UTC.
Absolutely.
And of course, listen to it after the fact. It's available on iTunes. We're going to get a video version out. We're getting the recording system down pretty well now. I think we're ready to do the video version. And I think you're getting the show open together, too, I hear.
Yes, yes. Good old Eden Soto.
Yay.
Friend of many, an amazing graphic designer who has so generously offered to put something really fabulous together for not just our show, but all of the Twit Network. He is working on something now based on some really stupid pictures that Martin and I took of ourselves.
I can't
some
wait.
Of them are on, so I know it's I think it's going to be appropriate for TWIF. You know, it's fun. Let's just say that.
I bet it is. I can't wait to see it. And how do you like the album art that Lori LeBeau Walsh and Nitrozac did for us?
I haven't seen it.
Oh.
I haven't seen it. What?
Did you see the illustrations that Nitrozac did of you and Marty?
Oh.
Oh, Sarah Lane. Well, let me pull them up for you.
Well, if it's...
You're going to like it.
So Twit... Well, it's not on your... It's not on Twit.
No, we haven't released it yet.
Oh, you haven't released it? No.
This is the latest... This
Nobody
just in.
Nobody said a thing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, because we first of all, I think you're going to like this, but brace yourself.
Okay.
So this is the album art illustrations that Nitrozac, you know, we send your picture to Nitrozac, and this is the illustration that she did of
Here
you.
I am. That's me.
I think you're so beautiful. I think that's it captures you.
She's pretty nice to me. I look thin. I love it.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
And you look like there's something going on behind those brown eyes.
Well, I've got a few tricks up my sleeve.
I mean that captures you. Now get ready because here comes Marty.
God.
And there looks like there's.
You know what? Okay. So the only thing is that his hair isn't long like that anymore. But otherwise, I think he looks great.
I think that captures him too.
I think he looks pretty darn handsome.
Well, we can give him a haircut.
Give him a haircut, but no, I mean the illustrations are really nice.
She does a great job.
Yeah, I mean it's like I can't. I mean, what am I going to do? Nitpick about? I just can't. I mean, they're just too nice.
So we've got those, and then Lori has married them together, and she showed me some comps, but she's not quite done. So once she's done, I will show you the various styles, and you can choose the one you like the best. And you get, you know, you can say no and. Nobody will be hurt, but I think I like them pretty good so far.
Yeah, they look great.
Yeah.
They look beautiful.
Yeah. I think they
capture you. I'm kind of serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know, serious, but I'm telling you, you look a little wicked.
Yeah,
a little something going on there. It's the Sarah Lane I know.
I've got tousled hair. You know what that means?
A little bedhead going on.
Yeah, I don't really know what it means, but
no,
it's kind
you
of
look
fun.
Cute. I think it's just cute. I think it's cute too.
I'm very flattered. I think I look really pretty. So thank you for drawing me in a flattering light.
You look just like you do in real life. I think that captures you.
Oh, go on.
All right, Sarah. Hey, have a great week. We will we will see you next week and with on Net at Night. And, of course, this Friday, just a few days. Now, I'm hoping the air conditioning will be in. They got all the pieces.
Oh,
I know. I apologize.
The thought of AC in the
cold
cottage.
Air blowing on you. It'll be really
nice. I won't hold my breath. Because I know how the stuff
goes.
We're
shooting to have the guy come in early Friday and put it in.
Ooh.
If everything's fabricated, I think all the parts are here.
Cool.
Colleen has to fabricate a bracket for it because it's going to be up on the bookshelf.
Okay.
I think we're all right. So cross
Beautiful.
Your fingers because it's going to be, let me just see. Yeah, 90, it looks like 91 degrees is Friday. Wait a minute, is that right?
I don't know why do you torture me so.
Yeah, 91 degrees and sunny.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, you got to love it. Northern California in the summer, unbeatable.
All right, Sarah Lane. You're a very optimistic and sunny personality, and I adore you. Thank you for being here. And we'll see you next time on Net at Night. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.